Hello and welcome to Talking.Golf on Wisconsin.Golf. Talking.Golf is a weekly podcast featuring Gary D'Amato and Rob Hernandez. And now, talking all things golf in Wisconsin, here's Gary and Rob.
And we welcome you to Talking.Golf as we cruise right along through the month of June. Last week of June, that means it is wrapping up with the Ray Fisher tournament coming up this weekend. We lost the women's state match play to weather. We'll talk about weather later in the podcast. But as I welcome in Gary D'Amato, Gary, we had some breaking news this morning as we record this here on a Wednesday. Marquette lost a very good assistant coach in Jace Long to LSU, and they wasted no time in getting what I think is a very, very capable replacement. I tell you what, Steve Bailey is the – someone called him it's an assistant coach factory down there at Marquette, and I think he's landed another good one.
Yeah, it sure looks that way, Rob. And the good one in Jordan E. Brugge, not a Mequon native because he was born in, I think, the St. Louis area, but basically grew up in Mequon and then put together, you know, one of the finest stretches of amateur golf this state has ever seen, you know, turned pro and had a pretty good start to his pro career, but then ran into some problems, had back surgery in, I think it was January this year. And I guess this means he's at least temporarily putting his playing career on hold to take this job as an assistant coach. But, yeah, what a signing for Steve Bailey to get a guy who was a four-time All-American at Oklahoma State. And, you know, he's got a resume as long as my arm, Rob, but he's been just about everything at golf, two-time Walker Cup player, low amateur in the British Open. It's a great hire for Steve.
Yeah, I saw Jordan's high school coach, Steve O'Brien, at the state tournament and, you know, just asked, you know, if he had heard an update. And he said that Jordan was out lightly swinging again, starting to play, but didn't really know where things were headed. And, you know, but while he's been on the shelf, I mean, he started basically online instruction. People would, you know, reach to him and he would work through video and Zoom with golfers and try to help them. I'm guessing that this kind of takes that to a whole nother level. And again, Jace Long spent a couple years under Steve Bailey. He departed for LSU. You know, we've got you know, a couple other, you know, former Marquette assistants in assistant coaching positions. Chris Williams at NCAA champion Auburn and Gator Todd, now the head coach at Kentucky. And then you go back to Mike Bielowski and Bielo doing great things with the MAC Fund. I thought it was telling in the release some very complimentary things were included from coaches. Mike McGraw, who, correct me if I'm wrong, might have been Jordan's coach at Oklahoma State, but he's at Baylor now. And then Alan Bratton is currently at Oklahoma State. You know, I think Alan Bratton said, you know, it's a home run hire for the Golden Eagles. And I guess, Gary, for our listeners, what does an assistant coach like Jordan E. Brugge bring to a program like Marquette, and how do you think Steve Bailey will lean on him?
Yeah, that's a good question, Rob. You know, Steve is a great college coach, but he doesn't have the high, you know, playing experience at the highest levels like Jordan does and like some of his previous assistant coaches. And I think that's what Jordan brings to the table. He's been through the ringer at the highest level of college golf, playing for Oklahoma State, a perennial powerhouse program. He's teed it up in five major championships. So he's, you know, he's been there and done everything just about that a golfer can do at those highest levels other than win, you know, big tournaments. But he's done everything else. And so he can bring that to the players on a team who will help. I'm sure he'll help develop. I'm sure he's got a great mental outlook on what to expect as you progress and get better as a college golfer. And then, you know, for the guys who want to go on and turn pro after they leave Marquette, he'd be a great resource for them. So, you're right when you said I think this is a really, really strong hire.
We don't really chart swing coaches. I don't know. At one point, I think Jordan was working with a guy out of San Diego. But, I mean, I believe at one time was also working with Dennis Tiziani in Madison. My guess is that, you know, he brings enough of the technical things to the table to help in that area. A lot of these guys that play at Marquette have their own swing coaches back home. You know, not everybody goes to college and expects to, you know, walk into a situation where they've got you know, Butch Harmon or David Ledbetter at their disposal. And so I like that, you know, the way that works at Marquette, it seems, you know, where you've got, you know, Steve has been a master recruiter, master organizer, has gotten some great, great talent from around the world to come to Milwaukee. And I mean, this to me is a great fit. And, you know, it's funny, the two guys that we thought would, you know, were can't misses, Charlie Danielson and Jordan Ebrugge, you know, both tall, athletic kids who wound up, you know, having their careers derailed by injury. Now, you know, Charlie's in the sports management field as an agent, and Jordan now getting into coaching. I can see this being a long-term thing, a big, you know, I've been following Lance Ringler from Golf Week, and he said it's been very difficult for colleges to replace coaches this cycle. And with the changes in college sports, I believe that is going to become more of a challenge, and there'll be more of an opportunity for individuals like Jordan Ebrugge.
Yeah, I think that's well said, Robbie. You know, I'm not sure what this means for Jordan as a player going forward. You know, he has played professionally now for several years, and you know, had some success early on. I think he went on the McKenzie Tour, which is now part of PGA Tour Americas up in Canada. And he played in those majors. He made the cut in the John Deere Classic on a sponsor's exemption, I believe. And, you know, he made the cut at the U.S. Open at Erin Hills in 2017. So he's got all that background as a player. I'm not sure what this means to his playing career going forward, but I would guess, you know, and we hope to talk to him sometime today or tomorrow and get his story up on Wisconsin.golf. But, you know, I would think that he would have a tough time, you know, resuming his playing career if he's spending, you know, if his priority is being an assistant college coach and doing all the things he's going to need to do to help that program. So I'm anxious to talk with Jordan and see where he goes as a player from here. As you mentioned, and we mentioned, he's had the back surgery and he's just coming back from that still. So maybe he's taking a year or two off. Maybe he wants to play again someday, and maybe he wants to, you know, pursue the coaching as a full-time career and someday land his own college coaching head job. So I'm really looking forward to talking to Jordan and see what we can find out in the next day or so.
Well, and one thing that we saw with Jace Long, and we see it with Ross Thompson, and in fact, you know, the two of them, you know, were, you know, both regained amateur standing after their college careers and have been very active, very visible in WSGA events. Right now, Jordan Ebrugge is still a professional. He's eligible for the State Open. But we would have to regain amateur standing to play in, say, a state amateur. But I could see that, too, and a lot of people, given how tough it's become to get to that PGA Tour level and stay there, especially now with the elevated events, the designated events, a lot of people, Jordan Hahn mentioned that when he, you know, talked to us about, you know, his decision to regain amateur standing and stop, you know, chasing the mini tours up in Canada and down in South America. You know, it's interesting because, you know, a lot of these guys have game. Ross Thompson won the Dairyland Invitational a couple weeks ago at the one-day 36-hole event up at Lake Wisconsin without ever having seen the course. You know, these guys, you know, Ross followed, you know, walked with Cameron Husk every step of the NCAA Championships while Mike Wilson stood outside the ropes and just kind of was there, you know, documenting with, you know, for social media and videoing. I see the same kind of infrastructure, as it were, you know, in the Badger program that it seems like we have in the Marquette program, where, you know, these guys that are working with the head coaches, you know, they form great teams. And that's really, if you're a recruit, what you're looking for. And I'm sure that's what we're going to get with Jordan Ebrugge and Steve Bailey, because I'm guessing that, you know, Jordan, having played at the highest level collegiately at Oklahoma State, you know, has a pretty good grasp on what it might take for Marquette to get to the next level. And, you know, and not only get to regionals, but maybe get through a regional one day and get some of those kids an opportunity to play at the national championship.
Yeah, and, you know, this is a recruiting coup of sorts for Coach Bailey, too, because if you're a young man out there who, you know, might not be going to one of the top 5 or 10 programs in the country, but is looking at everything else, and then you find out that, hey, Jordan Ebrugge is an assistant coach who has done all these things in golf, who has won a Western Amateur, who has played in the British Open and played in 2 Masters. I mean, I'm thinking I'd like to associate myself with those guys, you know, to help me improve as a golfer and get to where I want to go.
Yeah, no, it's great. I was when I saw that pop into the inbox here literally just a couple hours ago. So that's why we really haven't had a chance to, yeah, you know, get a hold of Jordan. And but, you know, I just thought, boy, you know, that made perfect sense. It's almost like, you know, it was perfect timing for both parties, given where Jordan is in his career and obviously Marquette's need to fill a vacancy in its assistant coach ranks here a couple months before the 24-25 season. So we'll continue to follow that. Meantime, Gary D'Amato just back from a media day experience up at Sedge Valley, at Sand Valley. And let's see now, this would be course number 4 among championship courses to go with the par 3 championship course, the Sandbox. And Sedge Valley, not as long as the other courses, but I'm told equally as challenging. Gary, what did you find when you went up there yesterday?
Yeah, Rob, I absolutely loved it. It's a completely different look than the Mammoth Dunes and the original Sand Valley course that have the big sand blowouts where you have ribbons of fairway between massive sand blowouts. This is more of a, I guess you'd call it a more of an Erin Hills look a little bit, where there's sand, but it's mostly in bunkers and not really in the big sand waste areas that you see everywhere. It's, people will look at the yardage and say 59, 80 or whatever it is. It's just under 6,000 yards tipped out and say it's a short course. It doesn't play short, Rob. 4 of the par 4s are over 400. 2 more are over 385. There's 1 par 5, but it's 542, so it's a true 3-shotter for almost everybody. And there's some really challenging short par 4s and par 3s. So I just had a blast. It's a walking course, as all the courses are up at Sand Valley. We took caddies. My caddy, JJ, had only looped a few times because the course basically isn't open yet. It opens July 1st. He'd been out with a couple members and probably with the Kaisers and a few other people who played it. So he knew, you know, how the greens rolled a little bit, but he's learning the course too. But he was a really good caddy, helped me a lot. And I just had a blast. I think it's going to be, it might be a lot of people's favorite course up there if they've played all of them. They might pick out this one, Sedge Valley, as the best.
Yeah, would you, because we're going now from 2 years of state amateur championships at wide open link-style courses at Sand Valley, the original course, and the one round at Mammoth, and then Erin Hills last year to Merrill Hills, which is a traditional course. Now, obviously, we're not talking tree-lined golf course here at Sedge Valley, but we are talking about the ability to narrow the fairways. We are talking about optically off the tee, Gary. Are you seeing a much tighter window to navigate the golf course than you did when you played the other two courses and even the Lido?
Yeah, the Lido is pretty wide, is really wide open. So is Mammoth Dunes, as you know, Rob. But Sedge Valley is the fairways are generous, but there's a lot of strategically placed fairway bunkers, and then bunkers not only near the green, but, you know, 20, 30 yards short of the green, and you've got to kind of maneuver your ball around some of the bunkers at times. It's going to play very firm and fast, you know, sand-based course like they all are at Sand Valley. So the ground game is going to be very important, and what's really interesting is that the green complexes are really challenging. Tom Doak, the course designer, said that the first thing he wanted to do was find the best 18 green complexes on that land and then build the course around them, you know. He sort of built it backwards. A lot of designers will find the fairway corridors first and then say, okay, let's put a green at the end of the fairway, and if we need to move a little dirt, we can do that. Well, Tom first found the green sites and then built the course around them. So the greens are challenging. They're fun. They're fun to play. The ball rolled great on them, even though, you know, the course basically isn't open yet. We'll open in a few days here. But I just found it to be a lot of fun to play. The short holes are a blast. You can score on it if you're hitting your ball straight and you have a good caddy and he keeps you out of trouble. It's a course that, you know, a 13-14 handicapper like me, I shot an 84.
Nice.
Which is, a pretty good score for me. You have to remember, par is 68, though. So that's another thing. It's not a par 71 or 2.
I noticed because it is, you know, scaled down per se, a part of the routing, there's at least one back-to-back par 3 stretches on the front nine. Is that correct?
Yeah, there's a really interesting stretch of a par 3, a drivable par 4, and then 2 more par 3s. one of those latter par threes is 220, though, so it's a, you know, it's a long par three. But I could foresee maybe a little bit of a pace of play issue on those four holes because, you know, you finish that par three and there's a group on the next hole waiting for the green to clear on the drivable par four. I could see where they're going to need to, you know, watch pace of play in that little stretch on the front nine, that four-hole stretch. But those holes are fun to play. I mean, you know, fun shots off the tee, dramatic looking shots, and the par four, there's two drivable par fours, not for me, maybe for you, Rob, but they're in the 265 range. So, yeah, they were driver wedges for me, but just fun to play.
But to that point, Gary, in the literature on the Sand Valley website about Sedge Valley, they single out the sixth hole being, you know, from, I suppose, the tips, 290-yard par four. But, I mean, you're going to a skinny shelf of a green, and, you know, and if that green is in any way elevated or, you know, requires you to execute a chip shot that isn't just your average bump and run, you know, you're almost better, you know, giving yourself 100 yards and then trying to fly one in there. And then I'm guessing that because of how good the greens are, that they hold pretty well, or at least they will as they mature. You know, again, you do have to use your head in a situation like that.
Yeah, and the greens are going to be firm, Rob. They're, you know, they weren't really holding shots. And they'll hold a wedge or a 9-iron, but if you're coming in with a 6 or 7-iron, you got to play for, you know, the front part of the green or because you know you're going to get 30, 40 feet of rollout, depending where the pin is, of course. And that fifth hole you talked about, if you miss that green right, it's like a straight uphill pitch shot. And if, you know, if you're short-sighted, that's going to be a very, very difficult shot because your ball is going to probably roll, you know, 30, 40 feet past the pin, even on a good chip. So you're right about thinking your way through it. It's going to be a course where you have to use your noggin a little bit and you have to hit some shots. We played with a guy, Matt Selhemus, his name was. He hit his driver as far as anybody I've ever played with. I mean, he hit his driver probably he carried it over 300 for sure. And so he got a lot of rollout. He had some 330-yard drives, Rob. But I don't think he probably broke 85 because, you know, his short game wasn't quite as sharp, didn't measure up to what his long game was. And he had trouble around the greens. And I think that's what's going to protect par is when you get around those greens, you have to be very, very smart about where you put your ball and how you use the ground.
Anything else on your visit up to Sand Valley that kind of met your eye? You know, it's been, you know, a couple years now since we were there for the state amateur. How did it look? I mean, it again, nothing in my travels around that area suggests that anything has come out to Sand Valley. It's all contained within. So when you talk about pace of play, my initial reaction is, what's the rush, you know, to finish yeah. your golf because that's what you're there for. But at the right. same time, you know, you want the good golf experience. And they've been able to deliver that even off the golf course with their, you know, with the resort, with the par three course, with the restaurants, with Craig's Porch up at Sand Valley, you know, the area where you can just sit in an Adirondack chair and just watch the world go by. Anything that you saw that other changes going on up there?
Well, they are building another course already called the Commons. It's going to be a 12-hole course. And no one pointed out where that is being built, but I think I saw, you know, because the turf had been scraped down to the sand in huge swaths. So I think I know where it's being built. And I don't know if I believe that course is going to open, if not late next year, then for sure the year after. So they're putting more golf in, Rob. I stayed overnight and I went up to the Craig's Porch at night and just sat in one of those chairs and just watched golfers finish on 18. It's such a nice, such a relaxing place to be. It's all golf all the time. It's a, you know, they do everything up there to make your experience, your golf experience, one that you'll remember. And that's not going to change no matter how many golf holes they add. It's just going to bring more and more people to that region. Went out to the Lure, the little bar on Lake Peatonwell, mm-hmm. and had a burger. And the locals are really, really happy with what's going on at Sand Valley because all their property values are going up. Although one guy said, yeah, my taxes are going up too. But that's another story.
Yeah,
but the people in the area really love what's happening up there.
Well, I know when we were up there, we liked the Lure, and then Hoozle's by the lake yeah. was one place to go, and then there was one place that wasn't open for the 2 days that we were there for the stadium. because it was early in the week. But yeah, I mean, it's just it's a very peaceful area, and there was a lot of rain that we'll talk about that in a second throughout the state. But how did Sand Valley handle the immense amounts of precipitation? I've got to imagine on a sand-based course, the drainage was pretty good.
I didn't even notice any wet spots anywhere, Rob. Yeah, so the sand is so deep that when the rain falls on that surface, it goes straight into the sand and straight gets filtered straight down, you know. So I didn't come across any part that I would say was wet. Played Century World yesterday, Rob, and they had a bunch of rain. A storm went through there, and they, you know, we had it was cart paths only, so we did a lot of walking, and you know, the fairways were a little bit soggy, but still, that course was in marvelous shape. And I saw our friend Jack Bennett out there running around.
Oh, really?
As a starter and ranger, and had a nice talk with him. But so I had two great days of golf, that's for sure.
My high school coach for basketball and pretty successful UW Stevens Point men's basketball coach, a couple national championships, and now, much like his brother Dick, living the life of golf. But apparently, if he's a ranger, it must mean that he can't handle swinging the club every day. I'll have to give him the business. Those who can't ranger, I guess, huh?
Yeah, and I think, you know, he did it to keep busy, but also because he gets a big discount on the golf at Century World. He said he had his some family members up there playing just a few days ago. So good for Jack. I love running into him. He's such a nice man.
Yeah, boy, I think I need to tell him he should throw his hat in the ring for the UW Stevens Point golf coaching jobs that are open.
There you go.
That may be the next frontier for JB. But well, that's cool. Weather was an issue though throughout the state. I mean, immense flooding. We mentioned the women's state match play scheduled for South Hills. Canceled. Jeff Perkle reached out to me on Sunday, and he was up at South Hills and sent me some pictures, and it's staggering. I mean, I don't remember. And then Jim Kelsch sent me a link to the Rock Golf Course in Waupun with a drone video that somebody did from around there, and I've never seen so much water on some of these golf courses, Gary. We're getting to the point now where it's enough's enough already.
It's crazy. It's like every other day a storm goes through, and not just, you know, a quarter inch rain, but I mean a storm with there were trees down at Century World. There were trees down in that area because the storms are violent and they're dumping a lot of rain on these on the whole area, the whole region. It's just, you know, I've never really seen anything like it, Rob. It's every other day something rolls through with another 2 to 3 inches of rain and high winds and lightning damage and all that stuff. And it just seems like we're in that pattern where it's just, you know, one storm after another. I hope the courses get a break pretty soon because they've gotten all the water they can handle and more.
And Mother Nature has been an equal opportunist in where she's dumping the water. You know, all the way up in the far northwest part of the state, a number of courses that have had to either restrict carts or even shut down for, you know, a couple of days. And, you know, as one course mentioned, I guess it was Rolling Meadows, you know, if not for that February and March revenue, this might be really damaging to some of the courses. We just got to the point, Gary, where COVID and the popularity of golf was helping fund a lot of the improvements we're seeing at courses. We're seeing a lot of great things happening both on the golf course, in the clubhouses, all the amenities, you know, some courses putting in ranges. I mean, it's been, you know, I would call this a golden era of golf in terms of, you know, public access play. And, boy, this has been challenging that to a large degree because you really need to be able to limit the traffic on that grass coming out of a stretch like this where you get so much rain.
Yeah, I mean, like all golfers, I think, in Wisconsin, we're hoping this is a one-year anomaly and, you know, next year we go back to somewhat more normal weather. I don't know what the future holds for the rest of the summer because at some point you would think, you know, the weather pattern would change when we get into July and August and we get those nice stretches of, you know, 82-degree low humidity days and where it might rain every 5 or 6 days, might get a little bit. But right now that isn't the pattern, and I think it's probably very worrisome if you own or operate a golf course at this point.
Well, we'll continue to play weather forecaster and follow the weather and the patterns there. I know that we've got a big event coming up this weekend, the Ray Fisher State Amateur Tournament down at Janesville Riverside. It always draws a great field, and this year's no exception. Gary, you'll be down there on Sunday. This kind of gives us a taste coming out of the match play, where we had, a really great finish last week with Adam Garski knocking off defending champ Ty Kretz in 21 holes after Ty Kretz went 25 holes to beat Jacob Beckman. We talked about a golden era of golf. Even though we're seeing a pretty immense graduation of great golfers on the professional ranks, we keep replenishing the stock at the amateur level. That was about as good a final day as you could get up at Lake Arrowhead.
Yeah, it was an awful lot of golf, and was happy for Adam Garski. Ty put up a great battle. Obviously, it went 6 holes. Happy for Adam. It's his first, quote, major, unquote, in Wisconsin golf. He's won other things. He won the National Club Golf Association Championship when he was at UW-Milwaukee. But he said, obviously that doesn't really compare with the state match play, which has a much stronger feel, and it's a much better examination of what kind of golfer you are. So was happy for Adam. And you're right, Rob. The Ray Fisher looks like it has a great field. I'm sure the state amateur, we're going to be introduced to another crop of young guys who are getting better and better, and names we will be watching, in the future. So we've got a great summer of tournament golf ahead of us, that's for sure.
And it was kind of that way this week, Gary, at the Dells Junior Championship. That class of 2024 that just graduated, getting ready for college. In fact, some of the kids are already at their universities doing some orientation-type stuff. So it led us to have a different kind of a feel to the field up at the Dells. On the girls' side, it was going to happen anyway because there were two conflicting events this week. A number of the junior girls entered the match play only to have it canceled, and then we've got three young ladies competing out at the USGA LPGA Kids Golf National Championship. Zoe Grinowitz of Wauwatosa and Abigail Hendrickson of DeForest and Emma Cunningham of Green Bay are out there. On the guys' side, so Kate Krieger broke through and won, just like Adam Garski, a very popular win. Kate, played so well down the stretch to help Divine Savior Holy Angels rally past Wanakee to win the state title last year. She's going to Notre Dame to be a student, maybe play club golf. And so she's just kind of enjoying herself this summer, and it wound up in a win. And then rising sophomore Cade Whelan out of Milton rallied to win the boys' title. So we are seeing, a different kind of changing of the guard, but that's where it's exciting for us because now, new faces, new stories. It seems like we're getting a fair number of those already here this competitive golf season. And I would anticipate we might see, although we have both, Max and Mason Schmidtke in the field at the Ray Fisher, but I would, expect that perhaps we might see some new faces rising to the top. Heck, you might get Ross Thompson again, the Badger assistant coach down there at the Ray Fisher. Brett and Cade Whelan both playing. I mean, it's a who's who, even though we've got a lot of guys. Cam Huss not back this year to defend. He's caddying for Blake Wisdom on the Korn Ferry Tour this week in between stops in the Elite Amateur Series. So we've got people everywhere.
Yeah, it's really cool. How about Cade Whelan? What a performance up there in the Dells. And then, I got to cover him when he won the Ben Crusoe Junior Masters last year. He looked really good. And I think there's a young man with a ton of talent. His older brother is going to Green Bay, right?
Yes.
Brett.
Yep,
and,
exactly.
And Cade, I think, will have his pick of probably some Division I schools when he gets to that point. Really talented young man.
Yeah, no, and it's kind of cool because he's class of 2027. We had state amateur qualifying going on this week, and Brady Thomas, who played his college golf up at UW-Eau Claire and was a star at Middleton High School, I had to give him the business when he won the qualifier at Pleasant View. I said, I just got done covering a tournament won by a kid in the class of 2027. You were 20 what? And he said, 2016. And so even young guys like that are starting to get old. And I'm looking forward to this amateur because Nick Schmaltz, who we know out here in the desert as being now a former Arizona Coyote competing for the Utah Hockey Club going forward, he qualified. He's a Verona native, and these hockey players playing golf. Gary, we got so much to look forward to in the next couple of months.
You're not kidding, Rob, but you made me feel bad when you said 2016 and said we're getting some older guys now, because I just had my 50th class reunion, Rob, so 2016 still sounds like a baby to me.
And I've got 40 years coming up. So
yeah.
If you're older than the two guys covering tournaments here, folks, you're young, not maybe young at heart. So that takes us to the end of Talking.Golf for this week. Appreciate the time, and we'll do it again next week.
Great, Rob. Thanks.
All right. For Gary D'Amato, Rob Hernandez, this has been Talking.Golf on Wisconsin.Golf.